Shiranjan is an IT engineer. He's 32 years old.
And he lives in Rongcheng, China. It is a city of around 700,000 people on the east coast of China. And he says it is a really nice community. But like any city, it has its issues. The traffic, for instance, has always been totally crazy.
Because the cars would not give way to pedestrians. And sometimes when they saw people crossing, then they would brake all of a sudden and cause a lot of accidents. Exactly. For example, the car behind would bump onto the car in front of them.
Oh, the fender bender.
Yeah, we spoke with Ranjan through our producer, Echo Huang.
Ranjan says being a pedestrian was just terrifying. You basically just had to hurl yourself across the street when you saw a break in traffic and, you know, hope for the best.
But now after the changes have happened, the cars, they will wait for you.
The changes that have happened have to do with the implementation of a new policy in China called the Social Credit Score. Cities like Rongcheng are testing out a version of this system, and the plan is that it'll be in place all across the country by the year 2020.
The social credit score is similar to the credit score we have here in the U.S. And the idea behind both is this. In a big, complex economy, you have to do business with strangers. And you want some way to know whether or not you can trust them, whether they're going to pay back a loan, whether they'll be a good tenant if you rent them an apartment, whether the Advil they're selling you is, you know, Advil.
And not Imodium, say. China
that
does not.
Yeah. That would be super rough.
China does not have a traditional credit score, and this has been causing some problems, like people not paying back loans and not really seeing any consequences of not paying back loans. But just imposing a credit score system was tricky, because here's the thing. Many Chinese citizens just don't have a credit history, and a lot of Chinese citizens don't even have bank accounts.
So when China set out to make their trust score, they kind of leapfrogged over the credit score and came up with something broader and more sweeping. The Chinese social credit score will measure things like whether or not you've paid back your loans, but it also includes behavior, like how you act at work or whether you obey traffic laws.
If you're not giving way to people who are crossing the traffic light, your points will get deducted.
Forget the annoyance of a fender bender. If you don't yield to pedestrians in Rongcheng these days, you might not be able to take out a home loan or get a good seat on the train.
And if your social credit score is low, or if you're one of the people who doesn't pay back a debt ordered by the court, you could end up on something called the List of Untrustworthy People, or the Blacklist. Right now, the Blacklist is in effect nationwide.
And people on the Blacklist can't get a credit card, they can't take out a loan, or open a bank account.
Not to mention a whole other raft of restrictions and humiliations. For instance, in some parts of China, if you're on the Blacklist and someone calls your phone, they will hear this.
That is a recording basically saying, warning, this person is on the blacklist. Be careful in your dealings with them and please urge them to pay back their debts. Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Cardiff Garcia.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. We are the hosts of Planet Money's daily podcast, The Indicator. And we've been doing a lot of reporting on The Indicator about China's social credit system.
Yeah, China is building a giant system to measure how trustworthy its citizens are. This system will reach into almost every part of daily life.
It will determine things like who can get a loan, who can leave the country, who can take an airplane.
The idea of someone tracking our data and using it to make judgments about us, that's nothing new. We know that companies do it. We know that governments do it. But China's social credit system will take all of that to a whole new level. It is changing how people shop, how they socialize, how they behave in traffic, and even what it means to be an individual.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, FM Global. You can't choose when a fire will engulf a factory or which data gets compromised, but you can choose analytics over hunches, security over peril, and you can choose to engineer resilience into your entire operation. FM Global takes a proactive approach to risk and evaluates your company's global exposure to make sure resilience is built into every decision you make. FM Global, resilience is a choice. More at fmglobal.com.
More than 20 years. That's how long Olympic gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar abused the girls and women who came to see him for treatment. Believed a new podcast from Michigan Radio and NPR, digs into how he got away with it for so long.
Rachel Botsman teaches trust in technology and is the author of Who Can You Trust? As she was researching China's social credit system and trying to consider the broader implications, her mind kept going back to this one place.
I don't know if you've ever seen that episode of Black Mirror that everyone talks about called Nosedive, which is just an amazing piece of television.
Black Mirror is a show on Netflix, kind of a dystopian sci-fi show. In this episode called Nosedive, everyone has a smartphone with them all the time, and they're rating everyone around them constantly. Every interaction, people are being evaluated on how they act.
I'm a five-starring you? Five stars?
Five stars, Stacey, for you all the time.
Five stars for you all the time too, Cardiff.
In the episode, every one of these interactions contributes to your overall score, and people can see your score on their phones as you walk around in the world. And that score determines all kinds of things.
That's reserved for members of our Prime Flight program. You gotta be a 4.2 or over to qualify.
Don't come. I don't want you here.
I don't know what is up with you, but I could not have a 2.6 at my wedding.
Can't have a 2.6 at your wedding? Wedding's over.
Brutal.
Of course, Rachel emphasizes that this is fiction, but she says the show makes some really smart points about a system where people have a kind of centralized rating system and kind of live and die by it.
Now, we are familiar with a centralized rating system, the credit score, but how do you build a system like this in a country where a lot of people just don't have much of a credit history?
Well, you can find records of people's behavior in other areas and extrapolate trustworthiness from that. And, you know, Cardiff, who has lots and lots and lots of data on how people behave? Big companies, of course.
Yeah, big
small
companies.
Small companies. All the companies. Companies.
Yeah, and in China, the big companies are really big. Alibaba is like China's version of Amazon. It has more than 500 million customers. That is tons of data on what these customers buy. And Alibaba also owns one of the largest online payment systems in the country and has its own credit scoring system called Sesame Credit. Alibaba knows a lot about how people spend and borrow and how much money they likely have. So do other private firms, and the government has partnered with some of them to share data. Data that a number of China watchers believe will be used to formulate people's credit scores. Though, as Rachel says, it's unclear how much data or what data Alibaba and other Chinese companies are sharing with the government, or how the data is getting used.
The way people are scored, it is not simply whether they miss a bill. It could be what they buy online. It could be
like
what
if you
they
buy like a low-cut dress or something.
Well, it's not far from that. I mean, I think the example that the head of Sesame Credit, the example she publicly gave the press was, you know, if you buy nappies, you're responsible, so your score will go up. But if you're buying video games, you're lazy, so your score will go down.
Nappies.
Yes.
It sounds so much nicer than diapers.
Of course it does.
Doesn't it?
Of course, this data collection and the weird assumptions that companies make based on our actions does happen in the U.S. and everywhere else. Rachel says that what's different in China is how severe and comprehensive the consequences can be. We reached out to the Chinese government, by the way, but they did not respond to requests for comment.
But the social credit score will not be all about what you buy. The government is also collecting data of its own, and that data will factor into people's social credit scores, too.
And we got a glimpse into how this might work, because pilot cities around China have already been testing out their versions of the system. One of those cities is Rongchun, where our IT engineer, Xiran Zhan, lives. And he says the data about him has all been bundled together into a single score.
So in the system, everyone starts out with a score of 1,000.
My score is full score. So it's 1,000.
So he's still got 1,000. By the way, you can get more than 1,000
points,
true. Too.
Yeah. 1,000 plus.
And there's a whole letter grade system behind the points. So from 960 to 1,000 plus points is an A. 850 to 959 points is a B.
849 to 600 is a C. And this is considered a warning level. Below that, you are a D. You are labeled an untrustworthy citizen. And life gets really hard. You can gain or lose points for all kinds of reasons. Get a DUI? That is an automatic downgrade to a B.
Get into a spat with your neighbors? Minus 10 points.
Give to charity? Ding, 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 ding. Plus 5 points.
And if you spread rumors online, minus 50 points.
Forget to clean up after your pet? minus 10 points.
To keep track of all this, neighborhoods have designated watchers, people who keep track of neighbors' behavior and update people's scores.
Oh my God, it's like the hall monitors that they used to have in grade school.
Yeah, except now nobody likes those
now
guys.
They actually have real power.
Yeah.
And it is real power, because if you have a really high score, you get discounts at a bunch of local businesses, your heating bill goes down, you get some cable channels for free, including a soap opera channel and a kung fu channel. You also get special invitations to community events.
If your score is low, life gets pretty hard. No invites, no free kung fu channel. Also, you might not be able to get a promotion at work even if you've been doing a great job. You just won't be eligible.
And all of this is sort of mind-blowing and even kind of amusing to hear about, but there are some very real consequences to this system. And one person who has experienced them firsthand is a man named Lau Duan. He's 42, and he asked us not to use his full name because he could get in trouble with the government for talking to the media. Now, Lau Duan used to work in the coal industry, but a few years ago, the price of coal in China plummeted.
That's how I went bankrupt. That's how my cash flow got cut off, because the money was just gone into smoke.
Lau Duan would buy tons of coal from coal mines and sell it to energy plants that needed it. But then the Chinese government changed its energy policy, and so the price of coal tanked, and Lau Duan was left with warehouses full of coal that he could no longer sell.
Lau Duan found himself in terrible debt. He owed various creditors $1.5 million, and one of them took him to court. Lau Duan told the judge, "I just don't have this money. I can't pay back these loans." But the court disagreed and put him on China's dreaded blacklist.
Now, bankruptcy does not exist in China in the same way that it does in the U.S., and Lau Duan wasn't really sure what being on the blacklist meant. He just knew that he wanted to get back on his feet and get a new business going to pay off those debts. The coal business was dead, but Lau Duan had been very successful, and he still had good contacts, and he decided that he would go to Beijing, hit up some of those contacts, and figure out a new plan.
So Lau Duan went online to book a train ticket. It was a high-speed train to Beijing. He put in his name and his payment, and right away this page popped up saying he couldn't complete the purchase.
And it says that this person is on the untrustworthy list from the court.
Lau Duan was confused. Why couldn't he book this train ticket? He started looking into the situation.
The blacklist. The blacklist had been rolled out before the full social credit score system, but it will be part of that system. It started about 5 years ago, and it has involved cracking down on debtors and creating consequences for people who do not pay back their loans.
And as Lau Duan discovered, one of those consequences was that he could not book a high-speed train ticket.
One thing that comes along with the blacklist, the untrustworthy list, is that you are barred from high-end consumption, which means that you can't take a speed train, you can't fly.
Flying to Beijing, Lau Duan says, takes 90 minutes, but that's considered luxury travel, so he couldn't do that. He would end up instead taking the slow train to Beijing, which is 14 hours.
And Lau Duan was blocked from booking a lot of hotel rooms in Beijing because that was considered a luxury expenditure. Trying to start this new business began to feel impossible.
The way to new business has been already blocked.
And when Lau Duan went to his bank, he found that all of his accounts and cards had been frozen.
One morning, when Lau Duan was driving through the center of town, he discovered another aspect of being on the untrustworthy list. On one of the electronic billboards by the side of the road was his face.
Just like up on a big billboard?
It's a big electric screen by the side of a big plaza. There are like huge screens and they're very eye-catching. You can really see them from afar. And I saw my pictures on that screen. Picture from my ID card and my ID card number and my name.
The billboard said, "This man is untrustworthy." Lau Duan says these billboards are all over town.
Lau Duan says he started to feel self-conscious about it all the time. It became really hard to go out.
Ever since that, I actually intentionally reduce my contact with the outside world. And also, I try not to go to these get-togethers with friends.
Why do you do that? Why do you?
I feel I'm afraid that people will look at you from in a different way, and I don't feel confident anymore.
Lau Duan says whenever he went out, whenever he'd see the billboard, he would just stop and watch it for a while. scrolling through the untrustworthies, waiting to see if his face would come up. But one day when he was doing that, he saw the face of someone he knew.
Oh my God, this person who used to be working in the same industry as I did are all now up there.
These had been successful business people, like Lao Duan, and now they were in the same position he was. So he called some of them up, started arranging dinners where they could all meet up and talk. He says the other people on the blacklist are now the only people that he can really relax around.
Because actually in the society, the widespread attitude towards us is very resistant. People will think, why are you here being happy? Why do you still have time to be happy? Why do you not go out and make money to pay back your loan?
So far, Lao Duan says he has paid back about $300,000 of the $1.5 million that he originally owed. So still about $1.2 million to go.
How long do you think it will take to pay off the rest?
It's hard to say. I think maybe over 2 years.
But even when Lao Duan does manage to pay off his debts, getting off the blacklist could be hard.
We talked to lawyers in China who deal with this, and by all accounts, getting off the blacklist, even if you've paid your debts, well, it's technically possible, but it just never seems to happen.
We reached out to China's Supreme Court about this issue, but they didn't respond to requests for comment.
But Lao Duan says he will keep paying off his debt. He has to believe there's a way off this list. Meanwhile, China is moving towards the full rollout of the social credit system. And by 2020, the system is meant to be in place all across the country.
After the break, we try to understand what this all will mean for China's economy and for its citizens.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Grow with Google. From coding to IT support, Grow with Google is helping Americans across the country learn new skills for the digital age. Learn more and get started at google.com/grow.
Okay, Stacey, when we are trying to evaluate this social credit system that China is in the middle of rolling out, one thing we've talked about a lot is that it just feels kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Like neighborhood watchers watching everybody's every move.
Undeniably creepy. I mean, at least to us. But when we talked about this with Xu Ranjun, the 32-year-old IT engineer in Rongcheng, the pilot city, he told us, to him, the monitoring does not feel creepy.
In fact, he says that it's made people act better. Like, he used to be someone who did not stop for pedestrians when he was driving.
Afterwards, I will feel, oh, I should not have done that.
Now, Ranjun says, he always stops, and he just feels better about himself. In fact, he thinks this system is a kind of step in the evolution of societies and people living together, where the needs of the community are put ahead of the needs of the individual.
There's one thing, I feel people have become more friendly. I think in the history of human being developing towards like communities, if everybody can follow the rule, I'm sure it's very good for, you know, every individual living in the city.
On the other hand, one of the reasons that this system gives so many people a lot of pause, the Chinese government will almost certainly be using it to try and control its population even more than it already does, to bolster its own power. Remember, one way to lose a lot of points on your social credit score is to, quote, spread rumors online.
Most definitely. And, you know, the whole time that we've been working on this series, I kept thinking about this one little scene from the Black Mirror episode. And I know that it's fiction, but it really stuck with me, and I haven't been able to shake it. And it's the scene where the main character is practicing her laugh in the bathroom mirror. And she's trying really, really hard to seem happy and joyful so that people will like her and give her a high rating when they interact with her. I think the part of all of this that I find the most troubling is that it makes emotions like anger, frustration, or even sadness into a liability. And it starts to kind of suck the authenticity out of human interactions and kind of punishes people for being human, for their own humanity. If you like this episode, please check out our show, The Indicator from Planet Money, hosted by us.
Yeah, me and you.
It's 10 minutes or less, comes out every day, and you hear stories like this one, or on the psychological impact of recessions, or sometimes lighter stuff like why the price of Fritos is going up in the White House vending machine. Even though corn prices are going down,
was an interesting mystery to solve.
Oh, yeah, but we solved it.
We did.
The Indicator is produced by Constanza Gallardo, Echo Huang, and Darius Rafian. We are edited by Patty Hirsch, and today's Planet Money episode, big shout out, was produced by Sally Helm. Also, we actually want to emphasize Echo Huang's role in this. She
yes.
didn't just translate for us. She also did all of the original reporting about this story for us. We really appreciate it. She's an absolute star. Also, quick note, Planet Money and The Indicator are both looking for interns.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, it's a good job. It's paid. You get a lot of leeway to help shape things.
Plus, you get to hang out with us. What could be better than that?
I don't. Let's not answer that question. Really. Yeah. For more information, just go to our website, npr.org/money.
I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith.
And I'm Cardiff Garcia. Thanks for listening.